31. They only fell 10 feet or so, but that was quite far enough. They landed on another stone surface, this one set at an angle, causing them to tumble over one another as they slid down the incline. Philip cried out in pain as his weight came down on his broken arm. The tumbling naturally ground to a halt as the incline decreased. The wizards found themselves battered and disoriented in almost complete darkness. Philip groaned.
Is everybody all right?
Tyler said,
Yeah.
Gary said,
I'm okay.
Jimmy said,
I'm fine.
Todd said,
Never better.
The thick, velvety darkness was replaced with harsh, glaring light, which, for an instant, made it no easier to see, but caused physical discomfort that the darkness had not. Their eyes adjusted to the light, but it made little difference. They couldn't see anything because there didn't seem to be anything to see. A featureless white void stretched out in all directions. Philip would have thought he'd gone blind if he hadn't been able to see Tyler, Gary, and Jimmy all shielding their eyes, searching for some landmark to give them a frame of reference. Gary seemed to see something. He was looking up at an angle and seemed shocked. The others followed his gaze. Hanging in the distance, they saw what appeared to be a rectangular hole floating in empty white space. Inside that hole, there appeared to be a room. The side walls were stylishly unfinished concrete. The back of the chamber was a rich, dark wood grain wall that extended halfway across the width of the room. From their angle, looking up into the room, they could see the ceiling was white plaster with exposed beams. They couldn't see most of the area beyond the half wall, but they could see the tops of light-colored kitchen cabinets. In the center of the rectangular portal, there was a table. On that table, there was a computer, positioned with its back to the opening, its cheap metal rear plate and dusty tangle of wires on display for all to see. Sitting, using the computer, there was Todd. He leaned around the monitor, looked down at the wizards, and said,
One sec, guys. Be right with you.
Seeing Todd and the room he'd been tormenting them from in person had helped both their eyes and their minds adjust to their surroundings. They were not floating in some trackless, mystical void. They were standing in a large, flattened bowl made of polished limestone. They could see where the curve of the floor rose and warped to meet the curved walls without a sharp line. The wall then bent inward to form a ceiling, clearly the underside of the flat rock they had fallen through. Now that he knew where to look, Philip could see the broken hole and the trail of debris, soot, and, to be honest, filth they had tracked down as they slid to their current position. Todd's room also was not suspended in space or being viewed through some magical portal. It was simply built into the wall high up where the floor had curved to be more or less vertical. Todd rose from his computer. He lifted a bag from the floor and slung it over his shoulder, then lifted a tablet computer from the table. His hand hovered over the screen, and he said,
Stay right where you are, guys. Don't move a muscle.
All at once, they realized they were standing at the lowest point of the bowl, in the exact center of the room, the most predictable and exposed place they could stand. They scattered in all directions as Todd jabbed a finger at the screen of his tablet. Todd disappeared from his room and reappeared in the center of the white chamber, exactly where the wizards had all been standing before they dove for cover. It was the first time in this whole ordeal that they'd actually been in the same place as Todd. His hair was short and combed forward. He wore a polo shirt that was tighter than necessary, made of a material that was shinier than necessary. His jeans had crossed the line from being rugged, casual pants to being denim tights. His sneakers were safety orange, and his shoulder bag was cartoonishly large so it could accommodate the extra-large sneaker company logo printed on its flap. Like many middle-aged men, Todd was dressing like he thought cool young people dressed. That's why cool young people change their looks so often, because if they don't, they'll eventually end up dressing like an aging dork. Todd said,
Yeah, do the opposite of what Todd wants. Good plan. Caused me a bit of extra trouble.
I had to move the spotlight 10 feet back. It's not much, but it's all the victory you're gonna get, I'm afraid.
Jimmy looked uncertainly at the others and found them all looking at him.
He was on to us, Jimmy said.
Yes,
Philip said, looking Jimmy in the eye, not blinking.
So it would appear.
Jimmy asked, what are you saying, Philip? Todd said,
oh, come on, Jimmy. You know full well what they're thinking, and as usual, they're wrong. Guys, don't be stupid. Jimmy's not working with me. I'm not dumb enough to trust him. I saw the little love notes you were passing back and forth. I've been watching you the whole time.
Even when we went to the bathroom?
Tyler asked, grimacing.
Especially when we went to the bathroom,
Gary said.
I bet it was the highlight of his day. He's probably edited together a greatest hits reel.
Shut up!
Todd snapped. He took a moment to compose himself, then continued.
Yes, I've been watching you the whole time. Even when I was sleeping or away from the computer, you were being recorded so I could scan what I missed for anything interesting. I have a bit of a backlog. Gotta admit, I've been a little inattentive the last couple days. I got some sleep and a shower, and I've been busy making sure all this was ready.
All what's ready?
Gary asked.
You'll see. But first, you were supposed to bring something, weren't you? Where is it?
Todd feigned confusion. The other men just stared at him, thoroughly unimpressed. Todd smiled and pointed to the hole in the roof.
You left it up there, didn't you? Well, I could make you go back and get it. It'd be fun to watch you jerks try to climb up there. But I think we should just get this over with.
Philip said,
I agree.
Really?
Todd said, raising an eyebrow.
I'll ask again in a few minutes. If you're still alive, I suspect you'll have changed your mind.
Todd looked down at his tablet and poked at the screen a few times. He casually strolled up out of the center of the room, while a glinting silver streak plunged down through the hole in the ceiling and into the very spot he had been standing. The Mobius blade stopped abruptly, vibrating and slowly spinning as it hovered in the center of the room. Tyler, Gary, and Jimmy instinctively seemed to gather near Philip, who was standing opposite Todd. The Mobius blade floated between them like a poorly designed conference table. Todd said,
there, all of the pieces are in place.
Todd stopped, then held up a finger.
One sec, guys. I forgot to trigger something.
He jabbed his finger at the tablet again. The lights dimmed, except for a greenish light that came from under Todd's feet, giving him a sinister appearance. When he spoke again, his voice was deeper, louder, and had a noticeable amount of reverb. Todd cleared his throat, then started again.
All the pieces are in place. The time is at hand. You have traveled far and suffered much, and now your reward.
Todd spread his arms wide. One hand was turned toward the sky. The other held his tablet like it was half of the Ten Commandments. He lifted his face to the heavens and bellowed,
Who will live? Who will die? We will find out now. The identity of the Chosen One, the man who will be free, will be revealed.
Todd held his pose of exaltation. Then, without lowering his head, peeked at his audience, all of whom were slouching and glaring. Todd shrugged and tapped his tablet. The lights and his voice reverted to normal. Todd said,
Yeah, okay, it's me.
Philip shook his head. Jimmy guffawed. Gary actually smiled because he knew how Tyler would respond.
What do you mean, it's you?
Tyler spat. Todd said,
Tyler, sentences don't get any simpler. It's two one-syllable words. It's me. It is me. I am it. I, the guy speaking to you, am the Chosen One.
Tyler snarled.
But explain to me how it makes any sense for you to be the chosen one.
Todd smiled.
You want to know how it makes sense? Me being the chosen one is the only answer that could make sense.
Why?
Now Todd actually laughed.
Because I chose. I got to choose who would be the chosen one. So naturally, I chose myself.
You created a prophecy foretelling the coming of you. What the hell kind of prophecy is that?
A self-fulfilling prophecy?
Todd said.
I am the self-chosen one, as I promised me I would be in my self-fulfilling prophecy.
Tyler looked to his friends, but the looks he got in return were more resigned irritation than support. He turned his attention back to Todd.
Look, this stupid quest of yours is essentially a story you've thought up. In the first chapter, you told us that we would come here and discover the identity of the chosen one. Well, aside from spying on us as we go to the bathroom, you haven't actually arrived as a real character in your story until just now. And you can't have the chosen one promised in the first chapter be a new character you introduce in the last chapter.
Todd looked at the floor and frowned. He seemed to be mulling Tyler's words. Finally, he said,
Yes, I can. It's my story. I can do anything I want. For example, there's nothing to stop me from doing this.
Todd pressed a button on the screen of his tablet, and the wizards found that they couldn't move. They were conscious. They could breathe, blink, move their eyes and their tongues, but they couldn't open their mouths or move their limbs. Any attempt to do so met with instant and insurmountable resistance. Todd laughed.
Come on, guys. You can't be surprised. This is the trick that got me banished in the first place, isn't it?
He waited for the answer that he knew would not come, then asked again,
Isn't it? Isn't doing this to that peasant the reason you all sent me back to my time to be humiliated and arrested? That's what you said at the time.
Todd waved his hand upward, and the Mobius blade lifted into the air and out of his way. He sneered at his captives as he stepped forward to get a better look at them.
We all know that my macro wasn't why I was banished. It was just the excuse. You wanted to get rid of me from the moment I showed up. I know what it looks like when people want rid of me. My folks, the other kids at school, my co-workers at the mall, even my jailers wanted me gone. I was foolish to think you were any different. I thought I'd finally found people like me. People who would accept me. But what happened?
He looked at the wizards, who were still grouped together, frozen in place.
It was just high school with wizard robes. You left me with the class clown to keep me busy, while the most popular kid and the smartest kid decided what to do with me.
Philip and Jimmy glanced at each other, trying to work out which one was which. Todd continued,
Well, now I get to decide what to do with you, and I've had some time to think about it.
He looked down at his tablet and said,
First, let's move to higher ground.
He pressed some control on the tablet, and they all, Todd included, floated into the air, then glided to a higher point in the dish, directly in front of the hole leading to Todd's room. As they flew through the air, they seemed to shuffle and rearrange themselves. They settled back down to the floor, but the force fields that held the wizards immobile also supported their weight. They seemed to be standing normally, but anyone who looked close would see that their feet were not conforming to the aggressively curved floor. They were lined up like soldiers waiting for inspection. Tyler was on the left, then Jimmy, then Philip, and Gary was on the end. Todd landed in front of them. He probably wanted to look imposing, but the slope of the floor meant that where he stood, he was more than a full head shorter than they. Beyond him, the wizards could see the entire circular room, with its concave floor spread out before them, and the hole where they'd come in at the farthest point from where they stood.
There we are, Todd said. Everybody comfortable? Good. Most of my tweaking time these last couple of days has been spent readjusting the force fields to your new shapes. All this walking has made you lose some weight.
He glanced at Philip's midsection.
Not that much, but some.
He fumbled with his tablet some more, and the Mobius blade flew silently toward the group, stopping next to Tyler, hovering 1 foot above the floor as if it was simply joining the queue.
Great!
Todd said, clearly pleased with himself.
Now to set things in motion.
He tapped the tablet, and the blade's attitude changed, so it hovered parallel with the curve of the floor. It started spinning and wobbled for an instant, the single twist in its contour that gave the blade its one side and one edge became a blur, making the blade seem even more dangerous than it was before. The blade slid like a hovercraft toward the lowest point of the room, the center. Todd turned to watch it go. Momentum carried it to the far edge of the room, then it started coming back. Todd turned back to his prisoners, satisfied that his plan was working. The wizard's eyes were still locked on the deadly blade that was coming their way, but Todd was standing between it and them and did not seem concerned in the slightest.
Are any of you familiar with Foucault's pendulum? Anyone? No?
He looked disappointed for a moment, then buried his face in his palm. While he was busy making a show of his disappointment, the blade returned, but did not quite reach the point where it had started. It gained the same height it had before, but it seemed to stop slightly farther away from Tyler than its original starting point had been. After lingering for a split second, the blade started another journey across the room. Todd looked up from his hand, smiling.
I forgot. You can't answer. I'll fix that.
He noodled with his tablet, then said,
How about you, Tyler? You seem to know everything.
Tyler got back the use of his jaw, but remained silent.
What's the matter, Tyler? No answer.
Tyler said,
Oh, sorry. Were you talking to me? I wasn't listening.
His mouth and eyes were moving, but the rest of him remained motionless. Todd smiled.
I just thought I'd give you the opportunity to explain Foucault's pendulum to your friends.
Tyler said,
Sure. There was this guy. His name was Foucault. He got himself a pendulum. They called it Foucault's pendulum.
There was a moment of heavy silence. The blade coasted to a stop, again slightly farther away, then slid away again. Todd's expression soured.
It would kill you to admit that I know something you don't.
Tyler said,
Not at all. I'm sure there are many things you know that I don't. I don't know what it's like to be held back a grade. I don't know where a guy would go to buy clothing that ill-fitting and ugly. I don't know the phone number of the hair club for men.
Tyler looked as pleased with himself as a person completely paralyzed, except for his eyes and mouth, could. The others laughed through their noses while looking at Todd's hairline. Todd could make strategic parts of the custom-tailored force fields tighten at will, and he did so. The chortles took on a pained, alarmed quality. The blade returned again. He eased up, and any sound from his prisoners died away. Now that he had regained control of the narrative, Todd explained.
Foucault's pendulum was invented by, as Tyler put it, a guy named Foucault. This was a heavy weight hanging from a rope, not a fiendishly deadly circular blade with only one side and only one edge gliding frictionlessly through the air. It's a simple device. You start the pendulum swinging, and then you wait. You may have noticed.
Todd paused while the blade again decelerated at the peak of its parabola, then sped away again.
You may have noticed, Todd continued, that it's actually getting further away from you, not coming back to its original resting place as you would expect. That's because the blade's angular momentum is interacting with the Earth's rotation. It's essentially a giant clock. At this latitude, it'll take 30-some hours to make a full rotation. But don't worry, I don't plan to make you wait that long. The other end of the blade's path should start sawing into you in a little over 15 hours. It's a way you can actually see the rotation of the Earth. Pretty cool, huh? I learned about it at the Exploratorium.
Tyler said, "You never mentioned that you had kids."
I don't. I just like the Exploratorium.
He spent a full swing of the pendulum just watching his prisoners. They were as still as statues, but even with his back to the chamber, Todd could follow the blade's progress by following their eyes.
"So,"
Todd said,
"before I retire to my room to watch TV and surf the internet while we all wait for you to be sliced like deli meat, I'll do you all one last kindness. I'll give you back the ability to speak, so you can beg me for mercy."
Todd hit a button, and they felt the pressure holding their jaws shut relax. They worked their jaws around and flexed their tongues, but none of them spoke. Todd said,
"Go on, beg."
Philip said,
"Well, we're not going to beg yet, are we? I mean, I understand that you're going for a pit in the pendulum vibe."
"Derivative," Tyler interrupted.
"No originality,"
Philip continued.
"But you've given us too long to wait. I mean, it's pointless to beg now. There's still too much time. We still have hope of thinking up a way out of this. You want to hear some groveling, wait 15 hours. If we're still here, that's when the pleading should kick in."
Todd shut them up again, then thought for a moment. He glanced at the blade as it swung up next to Tyler, then slid away. Todd nodded and said,
"Good point."
He fiddled with his tablet for a few seconds. The blade turned violently in the middle of its path. They didn't have long to judge the new trajectory. Gary had barely worked out that it was headed for his end of the line instead of Tyler's when he felt the blade bite into his left leg. Todd made a show of carefully timing a button press, and the blade stopped moving. With his head frozen, looking straight ahead, Gary could not look down, so he couldn't see what had happened to his leg directly. He could see a stream of blood starting on his left side and flowing in a thick, straight line down to the clean white floor. Todd said,
"Ew, you're bleeding. One second, I'll fix that."
He poked, jabbed, and swiped his way through some screens on his tablet. He found what he was looking for and slid a single finger along the bottom of the screen. As he did so, Gary felt the force field just below his knee get tighter, much tighter. The stream of blood slowed and then stopped.
"There,"
Todd said.
"That's better. Don't want you bleeding to death. Yet."
Todd smiled, fiddled a bit more, then said,
"And we won't be needing this anymore."
Todd made a few fast swiping gestures on the screen. Gary heard a quiet thud. The force field held him upright and immobile as he watched his own left shin, ankle, and foot, now no longer attached to the rest of him, slide down the steep incline of the floor, greased by a slick of his own blood as it made its way past Todd to the center of the room.
"Now that the danger seems a little more real to you,"
Todd said,
"perhaps you'll be more in the mood to beg for your lives."
Todd again released their mouths back into their own control. He was immediately rewarded with a high-decibel torrent of threats, insults, and high-powered obscenities. He smiled serenely, letting their anger wash over him. Then he pressed the button that silenced them again.
"I guess that means no." "That's okay. There was nothing you could say that would have saved you anyway. You have no chance. You've had no chance from the moment the quest began. The instant you materialized on that peak, this outcome became inevitable. That's the whole point. I put you through a long, irritating ordeal that can only end in failure and humiliation. Sound familiar? Sound like my training, maybe?"
Todd walked up the hill to approach Gary, taking care to avoid stepping in blood or touching the Mobius blade, which was still hovering motionless just below what was left of Gary's left leg. Todd came in close to Gary's face, looking up into his eyes.
"In a minute, I'm gonna go up to my desk there and have a seat,"
he snarled.
"Then I'll start the blade back up. It'll fly away, then it'll come back. And after a couple of round trips, it'll take out your other leg. But this time there won't be a tourniquet. You'll stand here silently and watch yourself bleed to death. You, my trainer, who put most of his time and effort into teaching me fart jokes.
Todd lingered for a moment, savoring the look in Gary's eyes, before moving on to Philip.
Then it'll be your turn,
he said, studying Philip's face as if it were a word search puzzle.
Philip, the self-appointed conscience of the group, who damned me with judgmental opinions nobody asked for.
Todd's expression slipped from gloating to irritation.
Hey, Philip, look at me when I'm talking to you.
It was true. Philip's eyes were looking straight ahead at the far side of the chamber. But as soon as Todd mentioned it, his gaze snapped back to Todd.
God, that's better,
Todd said. He stepped backward to address the whole group.
And after watching you both bleed out, it's Jimmy's turn. Jimmy, a.k.a. Merlin, the man with the power to either save or condemn me. It didn't seem like a hard decision. Well, deciding to make you watch the others die wasn't a hard decision for me.
Todd looked at Tyler and snorted bitterly.
As for you, Tyler, I didn't really care about you at all. You and Jeff really only got dragged into this because I wanted a couple of disposable people. But you've managed to make yourself a real pain in the butt with your constant criticism and nitpicking. That's why you die last. I figured you'd appreciate the suspense from a narrative point of...
Todd trailed off, then quickly looked at all four of his captives' faces before shrieking,
Look at me! I'm talking to you! I'm telling you why I went to all this trouble to kill you! The least you can do is look at me!
Of his four captives, not one had been looking at him. Gary, Jimmy, and Tyler all seemed to be looking off to their left, while Philip was rolling his eyes violently to the right. They all quickly looked back to Todd.
God, that's better. Anyway, so, now I'll... Damn it! Look at me!
They all had looked away. They all looked back as Todd demanded. Todd carefully studied their eyes, but it's not possible to look multiple people in the eye at once. Every time his attention moved from one man to the next, he had the vague impression that everyone he was not looking at was also not looking at him.
Fine,
Todd spat.
If you want to go out acting childish, that's your call. Go ahead. Look wherever you want. I don't care. I suppose you think this is some sort of final act of defiance or something, but it's pointless. Nobody will ever know about it but me. It won't change anything. It won't save you. I've got you. You're done. Nothing can save you now.
Todd noticed that all four of his prisoners' eyes seemed to roll in unison from left to right. Their eyes locked on him at the very instant something heavy hit him in the back of the head. He hunched his shoulders, looked down, and put his hand to his head. On the floor at his feet, he saw a filthy boot. He spun to see where the boot had come from, and he saw Martin, accompanied by Gwen and Roy. They stood along the wall of the chamber in their road-worn, mud-spattered, soot-caked jackets and jeans. Martin was wearing only one boot.